Welcome to the Hillingdon Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust podcast, a series of conversations with different members of staff to highlight some of the great work they're doing and aiming to give you, our staff, an insight into what's happening across the Trust, brought to you by the Communications and Engagement team. Okay, let's get into today's conversation.
Today I'm talking to Zoe Lane, the Trust Head of Safeguarding Families, who's going to give us an introduction to the Mental Capacity Act and how it is assessed. The Mental Capacity Act was created in 2005 as a visionary piece of legislation to help to protect people who may lack mental capacity. In this episode, we explore the five principles which underpin the Mental Capacity Act of 2005, and we consider what they mean for health. Can you tell us more about the Mental Capacity Act?
Yes, of course, Lucy. Thanks for asking me to come and talk about it today. So, in essence, the Mental Capacity Act is designed to protect and empower people who may lack the mental capacity to make their own decisions about their care and treatment. It applies to those who are over 16 years old, and it covers basic day-to-day decisions like what they want to wear, what they want to do, or more serious life-changing decisions such as moving into a care home where they're discharged to, having major surgery, or the treatment that we need to provide for them.
Can you give us any examples of people who may lack capacity?
So, examples of people who may lack capacity include those who are living with dementia, who have a significant learning disability, have incurred a brain injury, those who are currently having mental ill health, have suffered a stroke. But just because anyone has any of these health conditions, it doesn't necessarily mean that they lack the capacity to make a specific decision. Also, it applies to those who may be unconscious due to an anaesthetic or a sudden accident. But it's just really important that someone can lack capacity to make some decisions, but they still have the capacity to make others. So that's just really important that we think about it in a specific decision way.
Okay, so how do you know and how do you decide if somebody lacks capacity or not?
So there's assessments and reviews that we complete. Namely, we assume a person does have capacity to make a decision unless it's proven otherwise. Wherever possible, we also want to help people to make their own decisions or have the autonomy to do so. We also don't treat a person who is lacking capacity to make a decision just because it's an unwise decision. So we can't just state that because someone's making a decision that's not wise, that they don't have capacity. And that's really important to think about. If we do make a decision for someone who doesn't have capacity, it must be in their best interests. And also the treatment and care that we're providing someone who is deemed to lack capacity should be the least restrictive option for them. So then just moving on. So once we have concerns that a person is lacking capacity, we have to think about it in two stages. So number one, do they have an impairment of their mind or brain, whether as a result of an illness or due to some external factors such as drug use or alcohol misuse? And then the second stage is, does the impairment mean the person is unable to make a specific decision when they need to? So people can lack capacity to make some decisions, but also have the capacity to make others. And also, it's really important to note that mental capacity can fluctuate with time. So just because someone lacks capacity in one instance, it doesn't mean that they will regain their capacity later on. And so wherever appropriate, just to reiterate, people should be allowed the time to make a decision themselves, and we should be consistently assessing it just to ensure that if they have regained their capacity, we've also documented and assessed that. The Mental Capacity Act says a person is unable to make a decision if they cannot understand the information that's relevant to the decision, that they can't retain that information, and one of the most important bits is that they can't use or weigh up that information as part of a decision-making process. So we think about all of those things when we're deciding on whether someone lacks capacity or not.
So how can we ensure that patients are able to express preference for their care and their treatment?
So just going back to what we've just discussed, before deciding a person lacks capacity, it's really important to take those steps And also to enable them going forward to try and make a decision for themselves. So, for example, does the person have all of the relevant information they need so they can weigh up or use it towards a decision? Have they been given information on all other alternatives or second opinions? Could the information be explained or presented in a way that's easier for them to understand? So, for example, those with learning disabilities, have we given them the appropriate information and presented it in a way that they will understand or have the ability to understand? We also should really think about other methods of communication, such as non-verbal communication or ways in which the patient can let us know through different forms. If there's anybody else that can help us, so a family member, a carer, an advocate, someone with power of attorney, etc. Are there particular times of the day when the person's understanding is better? And would that help us in terms of their decision making? Are there particular locations where the patient may feel more at ease? Could the decision be delayed until they may have a better ability to make that decision? So all of these are really important for us when we're thinking about decision making process and the best interests of our patients. And also, if there isn't anybody in terms of a family member or a carer or an advocate that can speak up for the patient, we really need to consider an independent advocate. And the safeguarding team at the Trust will be able to help and support in the communication with that independent advocate or a referral to them. And they're really important to support decision making again, and also to have a decision or treatment that is in the least restrictive way. So we always have to weigh up and risk assess in relation to that as well.
So if we're in the situation of making a decision for somebody in their best interest, how do we make that decision about what decision to make in somebody's best interest?
So when you're thinking about someone who's lacking the capacity to make a decision and it's time sensitive and the decision needs to be made for them, then the Mental Capacity Act states the decision must be made in their best interests. And so there is a very specific checklist to consider when deciding what's in a person's best interests. And once again, the safeguarding team can support around that discussion and advice around it. Just to consider encouraging participation. So to do whatever's possible to permit or encourage that person to take part. Going back to what we were talking about, to identify all relevant circumstances. So try to identify things the individual who doesn't have capacity would take into account if they were making the decision themselves. So not to put your own influence or experience onto a patient, but actually think about what they would have done had they got the capacity. And that leads on to finding out their views, what were their previous decisions that they made, what have they shared in terms of their feelings, beliefs, values. It's really important that we avoid discrimination and not make assumptions based on age, appearance, or behaviour. Also that we assess whether the person might regain the capacity, and if that is a possibility, can that decision be postponed for a little period of time? It's also really vital to consult with others about their views about the patient's interests. So that's going back to advocates, family members, someone who knows the patient quite well and can present it to us. Also, we should really consult if there is any attorney appointed under a lasting power of attorney or enduring power of attorney, and if there's any deputy been appointed by the Court of Protection. But all of these things, sometimes they may feel a bit difficult or challenging when you're dealing with them, but that's what the Safeguarding Families team and other key members of the Trust will be able to help and support you in those processes and how they take place.
It's really interesting. Thank you so much for joining me today and talking through the Mental Capacity Act in detail. If anyone wants more information, please take a look at nhs.uk and search for Mental Capacity Act.
Thank you so much.
So that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Please do join in the conversation about this episode, tag us in social media and send us any other comments and let us know your thoughts, and we'll see you next time.